Welcome to another episode of Startup Health Now, the weekly show celebrating the healthcare transformers and change makers who are reimagining healthcare. My name is Stephen Krein.
I'm Unity Stokes.
And today we're sitting down with Kurt Brinkus.
Good morning.
The CEO of Averinformatics, not only a startup health company, but a new company, a new Cleveland, Ohioan?
Columbus,
Ohio. I screwed that up.
I want to say Colombian, but I don't think that's the appropriate. Right. I think Buckeye.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is going to be a great episode.
Stick around.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. The future is to those who take it.
Welcome back to Startup Health Now. We're sitting down with Kurt Brinkus, the CEO of Averinformatics, a startup health company, and an entrepreneur who I know when everybody meets you, Kurt, you leave a lasting impression. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So Kurt, how did you get into healthcare and how did you become an entrepreneur?
I got into healthcare by accident. So I started my career in property and casualty side of insurance, and
That sounds really exciting.
It was really exciting. It was very, very exciting. Built up a portfolio of products for American Express, and at the time I was working my way through college, and my degree in college was for philosophy. So I had never intended to be a business person or anything like that. And when I was coming to the end of my degree, I had done some interesting things with American Express, and I got recruited by United Healthcare. So that's how I got started on the healthcare track.
And so how long were you at United?
3 years.
And you saw something at United that kind of instigated the formation of Aver.
Yeah. So, well, United was a very interesting animal. So it is a massive, massive ship that you can't turn around. It's a lot of what I describe as kind of rearranging the chairs on the Titanic is kind of what it feels like. So you think you're making these changes, but you're really not doing anything all that substantial. And I remember I was very fortunate at a young age to get a large staff and a large budget. And I had project managers that had project managers that had project managers, and I would ask one of those project managers to go get me some information, and it would take 3 to 6 months for me to get an answer. So you think about that kind of long cycle time.
Forget what you asked for.
Right. No, really. I mean, the answer would come back, and I'd go, I don't remember what I asked for in the first place. And then I'm looking at this and I go, I think you forgot some information that I'm really looking for. So it would go back into the queue and somehow go down into the bowels of the ship.
Was there a moment where you just realized that, wow, that led you to become an entrepreneur at that point then?
So it wasn't that moment. I was asked to go to another company after that, much smaller company. They were doing about $10 million in revenue at the time. So it felt very scary to go to a company. Now, you know, as an entrepreneur, you look at a company like that, you're like,
that's a big company.
They're doing really well. This is great. So I went there, and they had three failed acquisitions. And so they brought me in to help create a set of technology so that they could sell the company. And we did that. We stood up a technology in 9 months and had it sold in 18 months. And so after going through that process, it was like, well, that wasn't too hard. You know, that was, you know, relatively reasonable. And the moment, though, the actual moment, so after the sale of that company, I got called by their largest competitor. And they flew me down to this company, and they did the whole executive show. They kind of trotted me through and talked to everyone. And at the end of the day, I'll never forget this, they literally slid a contract over to me. Mm-hmm. And it was like, they're going to pay me like $450 an hour to go. And they said, can you just do for us what you did for Ted? And I remember getting on the plane on my way home and going, what do I know that I don't know? There's something I know that I don't know. So then this was 2 weeks before I was getting married. And so I thought about it, and I got off the plane, and I went to talk to my almost wife and said, is it cool if we're poor? Because I think I want to start something. I don't know what it's going
to
be.
Good question to ask.
But it's a good question to ask before you get married.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so she said yes. So yeah, I was pretty lucky.
What else is she going to say? What else
at that point, right? She was committed.
She's going to say that, right? Exactly. Go ahead. So take us through that. So now you say, what do you not realize you don't know or you do know?
So I still don't know what I don't know. I still don't know what I don't know. But there was...
And is this when you launched Avra at that point?
Yeah. So there was this moment where I said, okay, well, if these people want to pay me to build some sort of system to fix the way that healthcare... So this was for audit companies. Mm-hmm. And it was around reimbursement issues just in general. So helping them identify overpayments and underpayments and things like that. And you know, when you look at that kind of problem and I guess as a philosopher, you know, I look at that problem and I say, well, those are just symptoms of a much larger kind of core mm-hmm. issue underneath, you know, the way that reimbursement actually happens. So in looking at that problem, I thought, well, I'm going to launch a company that's going to solve for the root cause. I didn't know what that set of technology was going to look like yet. I didn't know who we were going to market it to. I didn't know if we're going to go to audit companies, we're going to go to insurance companies, you know, providers. But I knew that I wanted to solve that problem.
And what year was that?
That was 2010.
Okay, so it's now healthcare reform's kicking in.
Yeah.
And you're starting to look at what the world's going to look like as a result of that. And
yeah.
what happens and how do you form Avra from that germen of an idea?
Well, let me kind of unpack that just a little bit. So like going back to the reform piece, I was really fortunate a few weeks back. I was invited to a group of 50 CEOs in a group in New York, and they had three CMS administrators there as well.
Center for Medicare and Medicaid.
Yep. And what was fascinating is they were up there saying, when it comes to these alternative modes of reimbursement, so this new kind of concept around value-based reimbursement, they said a couple of things. They said, one, fee-for-service is dead. It's a big statement. Fee-for-service is dead. Two, they said they believed, and now I'm as bullish as they get. I'm an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. Very optimistic kind of guy. They said in 5 years, they believe that 50% of all payment will be in some sort of form
wow,
of value-based.
Yeah.
Now,
this was in 2010.
No. This was just a few weeks ago.
Oh, recently.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm just kind of unpacking here a little bit to say, you know, healthcare reform is in full swing. At the time in 2010, you know, we knew that healthcare reform was coming. I knew that I wanted to fix this issue, you know, around reimbursement. We knew that there was going to be some form of it, you know, through these ACO formations and things like that. But I guess I would have, if I were to kind of think back in 2010, did I think that it would take off this quickly? And would the market continue to move this fast? I don't think I could have predicted that.
So frame what Avra is today. You've built this great company. It's growing. It's mm-hmm. bursting at the seams. Just raised a great round, building a team. What is Avra and what problem are you solving?
So the problem that we're solving is primarily around bundled payment. So what we're doing is we're helping move the reimbursement system from the fee-for-service system, which is inherently a volume-based system. So there's somewhat of a perverse incentive to say, I'm going to do this service and then I get paid a fee. And the perverse incentive is to say, if I do more services, I will get more fees, so I will get paid more money. Now, I don't think for the most part, a lot of people wake up in the morning and say, hey, I'm going to, you know, try and take advantage of the system. But, you know, people talk about like revenue optimization and, mm-hmm. you know, tools like that. There is $800 billion in waste, fraud and abuse in a $3 trillion system. So that's almost a third of the entire system goes to stuff that it shouldn't. So the promise of value-based reimbursement, and now whether that takes form in an ACO or some sort of capitated arrangement, subcapitated arrangement, or in a bundled payment, What it does is it limits what actually gets reimbursed. And it says, and it packages these things around the actual event that happens for the patient and is clinically relevant and makes sure that there's a pathway that we know that X, Y, and Z should happen.
So give an example, because I want to explain bundled payments to people so they understand, fully understand.
So best way to describe a bundled payment, so pregnancy is a great one. So there's 9 months of stuff that happens, right?
Going
so
in to see the doctor.
Unity just experienced
the
birth of his new son, Oz.
Exactly. Welcome to the world, Oz. we went through it 10 months ago. So, I mean, it starts out, you know, when you're seeing your primary care physician, you're going to your OBGYN, you know, you're going in for these different sorts of consults. If you're at high risk, you know, you're going to go see special people who are, you know, doing ultrasounds and things like that. You get to the hospital, they're going to do an anesthesiologist, you know, is going to come in and they're going to, you know, stick a needle in your back. They're going to have all these attending physicians. And then there's the follow-up stuff that happens there. That's 9 months worth of stuff. And that matches the reality of what is happening with the patient. So what a bundled payment does is we look at that patient, we risk adjust. So we say, okay, does this patient have, diabetes? Are they hypertensive? You know,
how old they are.
How old they are, you know, things like that. So we'll risk adjust and we'll say, okay, these are the conditions that this person has. Now, we know that for this 9 months of stuff, and this is the pathway that they're going to go through, this is about what it's going to cost. And so we help set a single price around those conditions. And that's it. And it simplifies. So instead of having all these bills, I don't know how many bills you got but.
So what do you do, and who is your customer to help leverage this? First of all, obviously you're doing a lot of analytics around this, but who's your customer and how are you creating value for them?
So that's a great question. So we traditionally, when we've gone out and when we've started the company, what we've done is we've gone after the payer, the insurance company, because that's where the epicenter of payment happens today. The thing about value-based reimbursement, though, is that what they're called these kind of shared risk models. And so the idea of a shared risk model is they actually kind of shift some of the risk over to the provider. So we actually do have quite a few customers in the provider space as well. And if you look at across the different segments, so Medicare in bundled payment is almost primarily a provider-focused sort of thing. They've actually kind of cut out, you know, kind of payers altogether. Medicaid, kind of depending on the state and the configuration, could be the provider or it could be the payer. And then traditionally on the commercial side, it's been all payer focused.
So walk us through what happens over the next few years with AVR, your analytics platform being leveraged by all these payers and providers. What impact does that make?
Well, we're about to hit a very critical point in value-based reimbursement. So imagine, you know, the system tomorrow is going to erode, and it is eroding. It's eroding very, very quickly, but it's starting to go at scale. Mm-hmm. So what's happening next is people started out by saying, okay, I'm going to dip my toe in the water. I want to start to get my arms around. I want to get this new worldview. So like, for example, like when we go into pregnancies and we go to an insurance company, we say, how many pregnancies did you pay for last year? They have no idea. No idea. You say, how many heart attacks did you pay for? No idea. So first thing that we've done is we've gone in and given them a lens, you know, at which to look at the world in a radically different way. And then we say, did you know you paid, you know?
So you're taking their data.
We take the data.
Crunch it.
Right, crunch it. Right. So we do all of this, right? We give them this worldview.
Is that in a report?
Yes. Okay. So this is through, you know, reports and dashboards and all this sort of thing. And that's great. And so we then
can look backwards.
So it's a retrospective look back. And then what we do is we'll help them operationalize it by doing what we call a shadow pricing. And so shadow pricing is saying, okay, we know that you're uncomfortable getting off fee for service, but what we're going to do is we're going to build in, you know, AVR here to help you look at what would your bundled price look like. And we'd be giving you the information as if you were getting paid under a bundle so that they can understand what would the impact to their revenue be. But this is the main thing that's going to happen now, is that these programs are starting to go at scale. And you're getting thousands of cases that are coming through. And, you know, to start, they can, you know, put a couple people at some desks and kind of manually adjudicate these things, you know, as these cases start to come through. But now what's happening is that they need a way to automate these sort of payment mechanisms. So that's the next wave.
So you're giving happening. You're giving how much of this is setting their mind at ease to start and slowly kind of it's like boiling what, the frog, right?
That's exactly like, yeah. frog. And, you know, can I use that?
Yeah, please.
That's great. That's great.
You know, the idea is simply right. that you clearly have a transition happening in the we're living through
but
this.
But it's happening
living.
At scale. It's starting
now. It's starting to happen at scale.
Right.
And these and also there's kind of this interim period where people are saying, okay, well, there'll only be upside, you know, on this. But now they're saying, you know, you've been doing this for a while, and now there's going to be start to be downside risk. That's the whole idea of shared risk. So if we set a budget for, you know, $15,000 for this pregnancy with all of these conditions, but you did not do, you know, your chlamydia screening and your gestational diabetes, and now you're having all these complications, they're going to be at risk for saying, this is all you get to manage this patient. So they're going to have to dig into their own coffers to, you know, to manage that patient.
So who are some of your customers using the platform today?
We've got lots of customers using it. We've been very, very fortunate. So just kind of going across the spectrum, integrated delivery systems like UPMC, that's been a really interesting model. We have a lot of regional Blue plans that are using us. We have on the provider side, you know, groups like Ascension, which I think is now the largest provider group in the country. Mm-hmm. On the Medicare side, we have some of these individual hospitals, so like Vanguard System, Valley Baptist down in Texas. We just signed up a group under Aetna that is also using the our tools in kind of more of a transparency sort of way, so they can get a view into this world and then start to transparently post these prices to consumers. So really a very wide range of different people.
All right. What's your favorite story about how the platform's helped, you know, one of your customers?
Oh, well, I've got a few. I've got a lot of stories. I've got things from the absolutely absurd that just says this is how messed up healthcare is to these incredible wins, you know, that we've had as a team. So maybe on the absurdity side, there was a group that we were working with. I shall not name names. And we went in and to go do a bundled payment. And this was for knee replacements. And we found out through doing this pricing, we're finding that the price on for this one surgeon doing these, I mean, just were way above what everyone else was doing. So, you know, we kind of started to dive in, you know, at the line level to see, you know, what's going on here. And what we found out is that this surgeon would go into an OR. He would have six devices laid out. And so when he would go in for a surgery, he'd ask his nursing staff to, you know, open up everything. And so they'd, you know, rip. And now you've just paid for six knees.
Wow.
Because everything is unsterilized and you can't reuse that stuff. Wow. And like, that's just like obscene. Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Like, why would you do that? Yeah. In what other business would you ever do that?
Yeah.
That's
Open everything.
Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to use it all. I know. Yeah. It was because he wanted to make a decision, you know, at the point where he got in there about which knee replacement was the best. Yeah. I mean, it's just.
So people even will spend their time and resources differently as a result of this.
Because, absolutely. Right, so this is the
well, especially if they're sharing in some of the risk.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and think about, so these hospitals and provider systems have never had to run as a business. So when you go in and if you were to say, what does it cost for you to do this? They have no idea. So they have no idea how much gauze they use.
It's
they
a
have,
free-for-all.
It's a total free-for-all. There's no cost accounting systems. Literally, there's no cost accounting systems within these organizations. And so it's all this squishy money, and that's why you have people kind of just doing whatever and, you know, come out. So that's one example. And cutting out that kind of waste is just an amazing, that's good for everyone. That's really, really good. On the flip side, and this is kind of like a company, just kind of all-time best, which was really great. We got a phone call because we sold all of our business by word of mouth. We just hired a new sales VP, and we're really excited about that. But, you know, all of this was inbound. And so we got a phone call one day from a health plan. And they said, hey, we were talking to this other health plan. And they said that you came in, you did this stuff in a month for them. And we really think that's pretty cool. I've got permission to send you 4 years of our data, which first of all, like, never happens. Like, it's like prying the data out of, you know, out of their cold hands, you know, to get this stuff. I've got permission to send you 4 years of our data. I've got a meeting set up in 10 days with our CEO. We want you to build these three episodes of care for us and then come and present it to us in 10 days. And I'm like, that's like we're good. We're not that good. That's, like, that's like really fast. And that's epic. I mean, to be able to consume a data set you've never seen, build out all these episodes, which normally takes other people, you know, months and months and months to do. We did it in 9 days. We showed up and they... The best way that I could describe it, their executive team, it felt like they were trying to like pull the bones out from inside of my body and like, you know, break them on the table in front of them. And, you know, they were just so skeptical. And at the end of the meeting, they stood up and they said, all right, you got the contract. I mean, it was just like most epic.
So is this
great.
your sort of secret advantage? I mean, as a growing company, startup company, you can move quicker. You can innovate faster.
Yeah.
You're bringing this new solution to the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, who else are you competing with at this point?
Yeah, so we have four competitors that are all these billion-dollar companies and all brand names you guys would know. They have a major disadvantage from the perspective that this is them kind of dipping their toe into the water, going, well, we think the market's going to move this way, and, you know, we'll put a little point solution together, you know, around this. And then they throw, you know, what happens with these big companies is you have these apathetic, you know, kind of people that are sucking on the corporate cow, you know, and that's what they do. They kind of go in from 9 to 5, and, you know, if it goes well, great, and if it doesn't really matter as long as they've got their job. And this is what we do. And we go in, and they're giving these companies have gotten to the stage where they were trying to sell it. We're going in, we're taking these contracts. They're now trying to give their solution away to these same customers,
right, for free,
and they won't take it. Yeah, they're so paying for us, you know, to come in.
It's value creation at its best.
Yeah. So, you know, in some ways, I feel like it's almost a little unfair to these.
Unfair. I want to switch to a little bit of your entrepreneurial experience. There's probably been a few moments in the development of Avver that have been standouts to you. What do you think are some of the best decisions you've made, and maybe even some of your worst?
Mm. Well, so this is my first time to the rodeo of being an entrepreneur. So there's one of the things.
And you're happy you made the decision.
I'm really happy I made it. I'm really happy. So one of the things that I do is I try and cultivate a lot of self-awareness. And like, because I always feel like it's the thing that I don't know. You know, if I don't know something, or if I have a blind spot, you know, I'm going to get, you know, run over by the bus or something. So I do a lot of work to really try and understand, you know, what do I know? And so there are some major decisions that I've made, you know, along the way. But actually, I was just having a conversation the other day with my chief people officer, Michael. And, you know, we were talking about all the micro decisions. There's always these, like, so many small decisions that you make every day, mm-hmm, that are just these kind of like micro adjustments. But in aggregate, they make a big difference.
Yep.
So you make these, you know what I mean? Like I don't know how you quantify
so
that.
How do you have a true north, if you will, when you're, you know, to guide all those micro decisions?
Well,
is it core philosophy mission or?
So yeah, I think there's a mission. So for me personally, it's a you know, you talk about, you know, like a lot of energy and all this. And that's certainly true. You know, I love people. I love talking. But my power comes from a very kind of introspective alone time. You know, that's where I get my power. I don't know. I think one of the things that I try to focus on too is doing the next right thing. So a lot of times there's all of these options in front of you. And if I can just choose the next right one, you know, and not worry, I mean, there's always the strategy stuff that you're saying, okay, we're aiming for that. But it, you know, on the tactical level, if I can just do the next right thing for today or for this moment to get me to the next stage, that's a lot of what I focus on.
So I want to circle back and get a sense of these pivotal moments. So if you look back now, 3 years old, the company?
Four
years old. What are some of those pivotal moments and the decisions around them that maybe have shaped where you are today?
So one of and this one being, you know, somewhat recent around the funding, we talked about how important it is to have the right kind of capital partners at the table with you. And
so you just, I just want to, for listeners, you just closed around this earlier this summer with Drive Capital
and with GE for $8.5 million. So it's our Series A round. And so, you know, you can read stuff and, you know, you talk about stuff about, you know, how do you get the right people? And a lot of times I think as entrepreneurs we're building companies, and when you need capital, you know, you kind of get put in these tough decisions and these tough places where it's like, well, if I can just get that money, I can stay alive long enough to get to the next thing. We were at the time we were working on closing some contracts and you know, the cash flow wasn't really all that advantageous. And you know, we had within weeks of payroll, you know, multiple times. But through that entire process, I stayed really, really true to the conversations that we had about make sure that you get the right people, you know, to the table with that capital. And that has been so true. There was a moment that we had, I know you guys know about it, but, you know, we had an offer for twice the amount of investment, you know, in our company. And I woke up 4 days. So all the documents were done. The investors, my angel investors, some of them were getting bought out. They knew that they were going to be getting out, right? They had already signed off on all their documentation. I shot up at bed at like 3 a.m. I'm like, I can't do this.
Like only an entrepreneur knows.
Yeah.
Any entrepreneur knows.
I literally sat up in bed and knew I couldn't do it. I knew it. And
didn't
I got
feel
on the,
right.
It didn't feel right. I got on the phone at 7 a.m. I called that firm. I said, I'm flying out to see you today. And they're like, whoa. And, you know, we got together a day later and, you know, we couldn't do it, you know, for lots of reasons. I ended up meeting my current capital partners, you know, and it was so funny. It's almost like going on a first date, you know, like, or if you've ever like really fallen in love, I was in maybe 5 minutes into this conversation. I'm like, we're totally getting married, you know, like
we should write a blog about, you know, the similarities between marriage, dating, and finding the right investor.
So, and the right business partner.
I don't know about you guys, but when I met my wife, I mean, it was a magic kind of like explosion of energy and just amazingness.
Sure.
And it was just like, you know, that was the thing. Like, you know, people always thought like, does that really happen? For me, it happened. That really happened for me. And it was very much
Fall
the same
in love
way.
Easily.
Yeah.
No, but you know, when you know, and that's important. So that was clearly a pivital moment. And as a result, you moved.
We moved to Ohio, and GE ended up coming into the round because of the credibility of these other, I honestly believe GE would have come into the round had it been with these other capital partners. But we have, and then what's so amazing is that because they think alike and they think like entrepreneurs and they think about, you know, how to build big companies and are focused on the right things, we're all aligned. Yeah. And we're just going. It's just great.
Fantastic.
I was gonna say, what are you most excited about now?
What I'm excited about is now that we have there's a lot that I'm excited about. it's like too many things competing here. I'm really excited about the team we're building. Very, very excited about the team because we talk about this a lot. You know,
scaling quickly.
Yeah, we've been scaling really, but you know, like, so just assume like we got the product right. So one thing I don't lose sleep over is the product. So that's a great place to be.
Sure.
And we talk about the why, you know, why are we doing what we're doing? We talk about the what and the how we do it, but it's the who. It's the who behind this stuff. And we are hiring really, really special people. And when you start to get special people all aligned, and when you can be that kind of choosy and get that right team together, it's really interesting to start to see what
happens.
And
you've grown, when you moved to Columbus, you were six people, and I just heard you're, how many people?
We're 24.
24, and you have a chief people officer.
I have a chief people officer. And that was actually, talk about a micro decision, right? Or maybe a little bit larger than a micro decision. I mean, here you are six people, and instead of waiting till being 75, mm-hmm. right, to bring in someone, you know, to start to scale, that, to focus on that, we said, we're going to do it now because the culture, who right. really matters. Because at 75, 100 people, that kind of culture is already formed.
Yep.
And if you make the wrong decisions when you're scaling in those kind of people, it takes way too much time to reverse. So we said, you know what, we're going to get this right and we're going to have our culture right. And it's been one of the best decisions we've made.
So, big lessons for other entrepreneurs, advice for other entrepreneurs that are maybe just getting started.
Yeah.
Or slugging through.
Slugging
through it.
You know, a lot of it is a slog. Mm-hmm. It is. So many times of just coming up to payroll, so many sleepless nights, you know. You know, we were talking about it yesterday, you know, the lowest lows and the highest highs. Kind of general advice. I don't know.
How do you get through those lowest lows and when you're coming up on payroll? I mean, what do you tell yourself?
So what I told myself is like, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
I mean, as silly as that sounds, you know.
Put a little Bob Marley on.
Yeah.
Zone out.
Really? No, really. A lot of it was, and a lot of it is, I went and touched, you know, every one of our people, and I'm like, look, this is going to be okay. We're going to get through this. I know we're going to get through this. I don't know right this second how we're going to get through this, but we're going to get through it. And every single time it worked out. Now, maybe I'm just super, super lucky.
But you know what? I think the leadership that you demonstrate when you do something like that and you know, your personality is there's a trust that comes across, mm-hmm. an authenticity that comes across. I think that as you engage with your team members or the broader community and the stakeholders or the peer network mm-hmm. at Startup Health, I think there's this notion that Kurt's being authentic. So if you're able to show that authenticity and be true to people, I think that they believe.
And that becomes like a magnet for everything else around.
Yeah. People can smell it. You know, they smell it along, you know.
Definitely.
I mean,
authenticity.
It's the only way. I love that word too. And that's actually something that we really try to cultivate. You know, one of the things too, if you don't mind, we thought long and hard about the tenets of our culture. You know how like there's always like those cheesy posters where people are like jumping out of a plane. They're like, trust! You know? So, authenticity! So one of the things that we did is we created these personas. And we're really proud of the personas because we think of persona as something that you can kind of like people get and they can kind of aspire to, you know, because as entrepreneurs, as just people in life, you know, getting through life is, you know, we try to aspire to like these greater things. And one of them that we have three, but I'll talk about one. One that we talk about is the new parent. And so when you think about the new parent, I know when I was a new parent, I was scared out of my mind. Terrified. Like, I'm like, what the hell am I doing? and then there's also this weird thing that happens too, because you're like, oh my God, I love this thing so much. I love this child and I don't want to drop it. Yeah. And there was also a moment too, where we talk about generational thinking. So, when I had my first child, I remember having this moment and I called my parents and I said, I'm so sorry. For everything I put you through. Because all of a sudden I had this connection to my parents and my grandparents. And then all of a sudden you start to have this connection to this child and you feel this responsibility and this kind of stewardship, you know, that you have mm-hmm. over, you know, helping this child grow. And so when we think about the new parent, it's one, you don't always know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, as an entrepreneur, I mean, you know, maybe there's people out there that say, I know, and that's kind of the fallacy too with like a CEO or the entrepreneur, right? It's like, we have to have all the answers. Right. You know, we have to always appear to have all this. And a lot of what we do is we say, look, I love you. You know, we don't want to drop the baby. You know,
we're just trying to figure this out.
Yeah. And then that generational thinking of saying, you know, what we're doing today really matters, because we want not only to take care of those generations that came before us, but all of those generations that are going to come after us. So if what we do matters every day, we have to be thinking about not just about the short-term profit and things for us right now, but it's about making the system better as a whole.
So you're a healthcare transformer. You average a startup health company. I think it's been 2 years or a year and a half.
A year and a half, I think, was my anniversary. Yeah.
What's your experience been like in the startup health ecosystem and just in startup health? You know, people ask us all the time and ask other entrepreneurs what it's like. If you could just explain what it's been like for you.
Yeah. So I can say this with all of the authenticity in the world, is that I would not be the same entrepreneur that I am today without you guys. And I know that, you know, for people watching the show, we had a summit yesterday and was able to, the afternoon session, what happened there yesterday was magic. That was magic. And I know that doesn't mean anything to the people, but there was something in that room that was alive, and like there was a thread between all of the entrepreneurs in that room. And you can't make that stuff up. You know, you can't recreate that. But maybe some more concrete.
Actually, do some context around yesterday, just so that people get a sense that it's not all just about business.
Yeah, it's not all about business. So I was totally blown away. Had no idea that was going to be on the agenda. So there was a topic that was brought up yesterday around, what does it really mean to be healthy? You know, and like, what does that mean to have the health of the entrepreneur, that the health of the well-being of the person, you know, altogether? And it got very, very personal. And people started, you know, really, I think it was a very introspective, you know, kind of time for people, you know, because as entrepreneurs, we live, breathe, eat, think about our businesses all the time, and we come last. There's a great book too, you know, Simon Sinek, Leaders Eat Last. You know, and we let everyone else go before us, you know, and we're the last one to nourish ourselves, because you want to make sure that everyone's okay. And so we had that discussion about, what does it take to nourish, you know, ourselves as and being a healthcare transformer is a lot more than just the business. It's about, you know, the health and well-being of us as well. It's really amazing. It was magic. So glad that you guys did that.
You were going to mention some concrete examples.
So some other concrete examples. Laugh at, you know, I think about, I'm like, I wonder why you guys even took me into the program, because I think about like my value proposition at the time was so weak.
The answer is simple. We choose healthcare transformers, building great companies. We don't pick companies and then look at the
just an idea. It's very much about the people and the person.
Well, I appreciate it because it's transformed the way that I look at my business, and some of the things that you guys do is some very critical feedback, but in the best sense of critical feedback, to really make us better and to really kind of think through not only value proposition, but, you know, think about positioning within markets. There's things that you do around just helping come off as a much more polished kind of pitch, you know, to that when you're talking to people, it's so important, right? I mean, to be able to explain what you do very easily. As you know, I think sometimes as inventors, as creators, you know, we think about all the possibilities, but how do you hone in that message and help people really understand what it is that you do? The other thing too is there's all of these intangibles around startup health that end up happening too. So the network effect we talk about a lot, of just getting connected to the right kinds of people, and the sorts of opportunities that we were exposed to were just so incredibly important for us. I mean, we had every disadvantage in the world. We were located in Green Bay, Wisconsin, with 100,000 people, you know. It's definitely not it's like the backwater of tech, you know, I mean, it was like manufacturing world, you know, who are these guys from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and why do they really think that they can change the way that the reimbursement system happens in healthcare? Can they really take on $3 trillion? You know, so the kinds of people that you could start to introduce us to was really important. When we started going through our funding round, You guys helped us prioritize, like, these are the people that you should be talking to, help make the introductions. Ultimately, both Drive Capital and GE both came from Startup Health.
Yeah,
I mean, that's important, right? I mean,
I think, you know, you were at the right place.
Yeah.
And we thought, you know, and look a lot at the personalities and the chemistry and the goals of the organizations and things like that. And so when, you know, you're able to see that perfect moment come together, we call those moments of value creation where it's just the right moment where the, you know, the venture firm or the customer, the organization and the entrepreneur are at the right place and would be a good match.
Yeah.
And it's not just about who's, you know, who can provide capital and which startups are raising capital. It's very much about the themes and what people are working on. So yeah, we're great.
Well, and to that point though, but to that point, so it's not just about, it's not about like you could introduce us to these people or you can help us, you know, get introduced to the right venture capital. What about the phone call that I get from Stephen Krein, you know, at 7 p.m. at night, you know, could be talking to your family or whatever, and you're like, hey man, how's it going? And this is where we see that things are at today, and we've heard these things that are going on, and we're just checking in to make sure that you're okay. We understand that these things are going on in your company. This is a pretty, you know, it's important. The kind of personal relationship that gets built within this community is really, really important. And there was a moment when we were going through that funding where I was in a pretty dark place, and I remember exactly where I was, what highway I was driving on in California, and I got a phone call from you, and it totally changed my perspective for and the way that we ultimately got through.
My pleasure. Fantastic. And I know there was interesting moments throughout the process where even term sheets and doing things like that became important. And it's not just about, I want to take it away from me a little bit, and there's the other community and the team and the others that kind of participate in helping you kind of navigate that, I think are
Oh, it was great. I mean, the entire Startup Health team during that period of time really surrounded Aver, and you guys are like, this is really when we start to create value for you. And we had legal help. I mean, we had help from the CFO to help make sure, you know, the numbers were looking right. I mean, I can think about, you know, Paulina was doing on you know, kind of the pitch side and what the kind of the message that we were presenting. There was this entire kind of surrounding of Aver, and we just all kind of moved along together. And you're like, these are the next steps that we're going to help you get through.
We call that our SWAT team.
The SWAT team. It was great. Yeah. It was fantastic.
So final wrap up here, the community.
Yes.
Overall, just the community around the ecosystem today is very different than it ever has been before.
Yeah.
Especially not just the peer network at Startup Health, but you can physically feel even being around at the Cleveland Clinic's summit over the past couple of days in our Healthcare Transformer Summit, we're in a different moment.
Yeah.
What somebody's sitting at a big organization with an idea.
Yeah.
Somebody's either a healthcare industry executive, a physician. Somebody from another industry that has an idea.
Yeah.
What would you say to them?
So
to inspire them, perhaps, or scare them away?
But this is what I would say is that, first of all, we need the best and brightest, and we need people to transform this industry.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of really smart people that are embedded within these big companies. You know, like, you know, I was a person at a big company. I can think of lots of people that I know, and it's really terrifying to think, is there life outside of this?
Yeah.
But this is what's so important, is there's a safety net, right? I mean, so here I was in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I could feel the safety net from this relationship, from you guys being in New York, and it totally gave me the confidence to continue to move on and to continue to build this business. I think that's what's really scary about being an entrepreneur, because there are so many unknowns, and, you know, the financial things and everything aside, it's a very scary place to be, I think, as an entrepreneur.
It can be lonely.
It can be a very, very lonely place, because you go, is this really a good idea? Should I really be doing this? Mm-hmm. But I think when you've got an idea and you really believe in it, to know that there is a community of people out here that can support you and really is a safety net is a really good place to start.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
One word close. How are you feeling right now? So a couple day summit, I know you're closing some deals. What's your one word close to leave everybody with?
The one word, oh man, there's so many that come to mind, but I'll just say fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you. It's great to have you as a healthcare transformer, and thanks for being here today.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
And thanks for listening to another episode of Startup Health Now. You can find all Startup Health Now episodes at startuphealth.com/now. Thank you for listening. Kurt, thanks for joining us, man. Great seeing you.
Thanks, gentlemen. All right.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.